You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the third of four podcasts on the management of uterine fibroids hosted by the Med Learning Group, titled Development of Novel Therapies for the Treatment of Patients with Uterine Fibroids. What are the data telling us? This series will be designed to meet the educational needs of US-based obstetrician gynecologists and other healthcare professionals involved in the care and treatment of patients with uterine fibroids. I'm Surabhi Dangi Garimella, Medical Director with the Med Learning Group, and I'll be your host today. Joining me are Dr. Andrea Lucas, founder and CEO of Carolina Women's Research and Wellness Center, and Dr. Hugh Taylor, Anita O'Keefe Young Professor of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Sciences, Professor of Molecular, Cellular, and Developmental Biology, Chair of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Sciences, Yale School of Medicine, Chief of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Yale New Haven Hospital. Drs. Lucas and Taylor joined us in the first episode of this podcast series to discuss challenges in current uterine fibroid management. In this episode, we will be talking about the latest data from clinical trials evaluating combination therapies with gonadotropin-releasing hormone antagonists. Dr. Lucas and Dr. Taylor, welcome back.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you.
Let's start off with some basic understanding of using gonadotropin-releasing hormone, or GnRH, analogs in uterine fibroid management. Dr. Taylor, if you would like to start us off.
So both GnRH agonists and GnRH antagonists work at the GnRH receptor. It all starts in the brain, which is where these signals emanate from that control sex steroid production, estrogen, progestin production. The hypothalamus makes GnRH and normally makes it in a pulsatile fashion. And those short bursts of GnRH lead to production of FSH and LH. When we give massive amounts of a GnRH agonist continuously, initially the receptor, as you'd expect, is stimulated, produces a lot more FSH, which leads to a lot more estrogen production, the so-called flare effect. It initially makes things worse. Once the receptor has been stimulated aggressively, it becomes desensitized and downregulated. And in the long run, after a week or two, stops the pituitary from producing FSH, reducing estrogen levels to essentially zero. So it's an all or nothing response. It is aggressive stimulation that leads to downregulation and zero FSH production, leading to estrogen levels that are in the menopausal range. The adverse effects of this, of course, can be menopausal type symptoms, vasomotor symptoms, in the long run, bone loss. And add-back therapy is generally recommended when these agents are going to be used for the long term. The classic example of this is leuprolide that we've used for many years. The advent of GnRH antagonists, though, have made this much easier in many ways. The GnRH antagonist works on the very same receptor in the pituitary gland, except instead of initially stimulating the receptor, it immediately blocks it. So you don't get that initial outpouring of FSH. You don't get that initial increase in estrogen levels. You don't get that so-called flare effect where things can get worse before they get better. It immediately blocks the receptor. And that allows for very rapid onset of action. The estradiol levels will plummet within 24 to 48 hours and immediately have some efficacy. The same adverse effects, though, from lowering estradiol levels, you can get vasomotor symptoms, and in the long run, you can get bone loss. So for long-term use, these agents have been coupled with add-back therapy combined in the prescription medication so that even though the estrogen level is lowered, small amounts of estradiol and norethindrone are co-administered with these agents to prevent those vasomotor symptoms, the bone loss, and other symptoms such as vaginal atrophy, all of the menopause-related symptoms that we see from lack of estrogen production.
Dr. Lucas, could you highlight some of the pros and cons of using these two types of GnRH analogs that Dr. Taylor was just referring to?
Well, let's start with the GnRH agonists for treatment of uterine fibroids. So these have been around much longer. They can be administered by intramuscular route, subcutaneous, or intranasal routes. As Hugh mentioned, the mechanism of action is inducing a medical menopause, certainly useful for those women who do not want surgery, or if surgery is planned, can reduce the fibroids size and can improve anemia. Add-back hormone replacement therapy can be concomitantly given to reduce flushing, vaginal dryness, and decreased libido. The GnRH agonists are usually stopped after 6 months. There may be reasons why you could extend that, but usually hormone replacement therapy or add-back therapy is recommended. But advantages are it can reduce blood loss, operative time, and recovery time if you're electing surgery. And then if we look at the advantages of the GnRH antagonists over the GnRH agonists, again, these are oral. The mechanism of action begins immediately with suppression. You can use them up to 24 months, so they can be used longer. Dosing with hormone replacement therapy is within the formulation, so you're not taking something separate. You don't have that flare effect that we explained earlier on, where you have an upregulation in receptors.
I find patients really love these GnRH antagonist regimens. As you say, they're oral. People don't like getting those shots. They're oral. They work rapidly. And the add-back's built in. So it's just so easy.
Agree. And you see the benefit, the reduction in bleeding by the first month or two, which is nice.
It's very rapid. Absolutely.
Moving on to what some of the clinical trials have shown us, can you speak to the key findings from the Alaris UF1 and UF2 studies for the GnRH antagonist elagolix? How many patients achieve the primary endpoint, and are there certain important safety signals that we need to talk about?
Yeah, I think the Alaris studies used the GnRH antagonist elagolix combined with estradiol and norethindrone. Actually, there was an arm without the add-back therapy, but the results were very similar, and it's not commercially marketed without add-back therapy. So the only commercially available preparation is with add-back. The success rates were great. There were two separate studies, Alaris uterine fibroid 1 and 2, and about 69% and 77% showed a clinically meaningful response rate. So, you know, on average, mid-70s percent of women. So the majority of women showed what was considered an appropriate response rate. That included bleeding being reduced to half what it was initially and within the normal range for menstrual flow. If you look at the number who showed any sort of response, it's actually much higher than that. But those who met the approved primary endpoint of, again, a 50% reduction and within the normal range of bleeding, about 75% on average in these two trials. So really quite effective and easy to use. The bone density measurements were quite good that showed that is not a concern in the two-year approved indication for this drug. And hot flashes and other menopausal symptoms were really quite mild or not apparent in most subjects in the trial. So really well tolerated and very effective, and most women showed response to therapy.
How about the other GnRH antagonist, relagolix? What did the Liberty 1 and 2 trials find with respect to the effect of relagolix combination therapy on fibroid-related menstrual bleeding and pain management?
So the relagolix combination therapy, again, two pivotal phase 3 studies, Liberty 1 and Liberty 2. Primary endpoint looked at reduction of menstrual bleeding after 6 months of use. There was a placebo arm, a relagolix combination therapy, and then a delayed relagolix combination therapy where the FDA wanted the sponsor to look at relagolix alone and then combine that with after 12 weeks. There was an additional months of relagolix combination therapy. The relagolix alone is not available for treatment. So we only have the relagolix combination therapy, but you see in Liberty 1 and Liberty 2, over 70% response to both treatment arms versus the placebo, which was quite low, below 20%. So in 2021, just the following year, elagolix got approved in 2020. Relagolix got approved in 2021. Again, for relagolix combination therapy, the side effects were quite minimal. We also saw, interestingly, pain, which we don't always associate with fibroids decades ago. Pain clearly improved in the patient's perceptive of pain. Being on relagolix combination therapy was much improved.
And both these agents are highly effective. We now have two choices for use for treating uterine fibroids. Both reduce bleeding, both reduce pain. There's some other good quality of life measures that were improved, anemia improved. These drugs are working very well. It's refreshing to see two great new drugs that are very patient-friendly and easy to use available in our armamentarium now.
How do you think these trial findings will help integrate GnRH antagonists into the clinical setting?
I think these are become fairly obvious choices. I often will use them now as first line for medical therapy for patients with uterine fibroids. They're very effective, very well tolerated, very safe, improve so much. Not only that, but they really retard the growth of fibroids, although they're not FDA approved for that indication. I like to use it in somebody who has small fibroids to prevent further growth of the fibroids as well. For me, this is first line therapy when someone wants to use medical therapy or when medical therapy is appropriate. Obviously, if somebody doesn't want to be on a medication, we still talk about all the other options. Even those with fairly severe large fibroids and significantly heavy bleeding respond well to these medications. So I'm predisposed now to give a trial of these medications prior to offering other therapies.
I agree. I think this is first-line therapy now with the GnRH antagonists. ACOG has stated that in their most recent bulletin. I would remind the audience that neither is approved for contraception at this time, so you always have to address that if someone is requiring contraception. But I definitely agree, it's a first-line treatment now.
Any final words on the combination GnRH antagonists and their overall impact on uterine fibroid management, Dr. Lucas?
Well, my hope would be that not only does the OBGYN prescribe this, but this might also be used by primary care providers, by nurse practitioners. The safety and efficacy is very well established. So as long as the evaluation is done, you've ruled out other causes for abnormal bleeding, as we discussed earlier, I think these are going to have a positive impact on a woman's response. It can improve both the bleeding and the bulk symptoms. And it's exciting that we have both of these medications available now.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. This has really become a welcome first-line therapy. You know, before, all the medical therapies we had really just worked on trying to reduce bleeding on the endometrium or on blood clotting, the transexamic acid. This is the first thing that really stops the growth of the fibroids. And again, the efficacy and safety profile are so positive. I expect these will be widely used by primary care physicians and others outside of the field of OBGYN for this very, very common and sometimes under-recognized and under-treated condition. This has been a real game changer for me.
Do either of you think it might be important to bring up any demographic differences based on the trials and speak to that a little bit in terms of response?
Hugh, I'd also would point out that even though we mentioned Black women have a higher prevalence of fibroids, can have more severe conditions, when you use these GnRH antagonists, they benefit the Black women as much as the white women. So there's no race issue on the medical therapies.
Yeah, it really decreases bleeding across a wide range of different types of fibroids, different presentations, Black, white, really very effective in really all groups studied.
That's all the time we have for today. In our fourth and final podcast, we will discuss the importance of shared decision-making in uterine fibroid management. I'd like to thank Dr. Andrea Lucas and Dr. Hugh Taylor for taking the time to speak with us. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining us. Make sure you listen to all four podcasts in this learning series, as well as other types of CME programs offered by the MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide CME education for physicians. This activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. A special thank you to Pfizer and Myovant Sciences, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity. Have a wonderful day.